Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day and welcome, Orlando entrepreneurs, to the show. My name is Josh, and I'm a fellow entrepreneur, just like you guys in the trenches, building businesses here in Orlando, and really get the pleasure and privilege of going around having conversations with other great Orlando entrepreneurs and putting them on the show. We want to show people that Orlando is a great place to build a business, to buy business, to invest in businesses, and then once you hit it big, to stay in Orlando. So welcome to the show. This is really exciting. We have the founder of Fervor Works. Welcome to the show, Shay. Shay, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I'm so excited about what you're doing, Josh, and the fact that we've got this podcast happening. It's just such an honor to be here today. Thank you.
Yeah, well, this is absolutely amazing. Your company is so unique. It's so excited that I'm really excited about sharing it. So why don't you break the ice and tell us what your company is and what you guys do?
Absolutely. So our model isn't that unique or exciting. Our model is that we go into growing companies and we help them implement systems for growth. So I think what is really unique about our company is the product that we actually bring in to implement. So the system that we bring in to implement is all around empathy. So we are coming in and we are helping companies to systematize empathy and leverage empathy for growth, both in taking more market share and also in growing team culture and retaining top talent.
All right. So that sounds pretty interesting. Let's go over, first of all, for people out there, what the heck is empathy, right? So for people who might not have empathy or not know what is empathy? And then how do you systematize it?
It's a golden question. I love it. So let's start with what empathy is not. So empathy is not understanding what somebody else wants and then doing it, right? So empathy isn't this idea of trying to give everybody what they want, because we can't serve everybody, right? We're called to a specific group of people. Also, empathy is not an inherent trait. So it's not just you're either gifted and born with it or you're not, end of story. So that's not empathy. Empathy is actually teachable, learnable, and therefore trainable and systematizable. So if we've got that preface of what empathy is not, then the way we describe empathy is perspective taking with compassionate action. So it's this idea of getting inside the skin of someone else, walking around inside their skin, seeing things from their perspective, doing that for whoever your target audience is that you're trying to serve, and then marrying those perspectives with your internal perspectives to take compassionate action that maybe alleviates pains or increases gains and joys.
Okay. Let's unwrap this a little bit. So this sounds very hard for maybe a huge brand to understand. So give me an example of how empathy could really help impact them increase their business, you know, their bottom line.
Absolutely. So an example of a case study that we actually have on our website that's really fun is it was a sporting goods company that manufactured softball protective gear and wanted to grow. And so they thought, well, the opportunity seems to be in baseball. And so they moved into manufacturing baseball equipment and they really felt like they were hitting a plateau. And no matter, you know, what proven systems they used prior, which was innovative, high quality products, protective products, they just weren't growing anymore. And so they came to us for help. And when we helped them to start applying some systematic empathy, they actually discovered that baseball isn't their market at all. Softball only is their market, and that their customers had needs that nobody else in the market was filling, and their customers were thinking of and talking about the existing products in ways that nobody was talking and thinking about them. So as soon as they started using their customers' words back to them, to help their customers connect the dots between their wants and needs and the products that were available, they started seeing tremendous growth. Then when they did roll out new products, there was already demand. You know, there's already a line out the door ready and waiting for the first product to hit the shelves because they were co-created with their audience.
Okay, so you help companies walk in the shoes in a compassionate way to take a compassionate action through their customers' eyes, what's really important to the customer. So give me an example. In that mm-hmm. example, right, softball protective gear, what were some of the compassionate things that were going through the customer's mind that maybe the business owners weren't quite getting yet?
This is so fun. So if you think about this company, very innovative, very tech-driven, all men, right? Like in their 30s, 40s, great, compassionate, kind men who, you know, are running this business to help protect girls, middle school and high school girls, from having damage, right, as they play this sport. So they're sitting around and they're thinking, like, what do these girls need? Oh, man, they need, like, stronger face masks. They need better bats. They need apps that can help them improve their swing and find coaches, you know, all these things that they're thinking, which are fair, right, assumptions, right? But what was so amazing is while those things might have been things that any athlete needs, when they actually went and talked to the players, they talked to 12-year-old Ashley and they talked to 16-year-old Kelly, what they discovered was that all of these sliders that go up under their pants, they fit wrong. And they bunch and they cut wrong. And none of them had period protection. And a lot of them wear white pants for game day. And so this idea of like period leakage in a really high profile game was just mortifying for these girls. So this amazing team of founders and leaders came together and said, well, yeah, I mean, we can make all the obvious things, but those aren't migraine headaches. Kelly and Ashley said they need better sliders and they need sliders with period protection. We're going to figure out how to do that. And they've done it. And it is wildly successful.
I admit, I would have never thought of that. So that's it, right? So how could I better serve my clients is really understanding their true desires and needs. I don't think I've ever had someone mention that on my show. I'm a little even embarrassed to say it myself.
You know what? Bring more feminists on your show. You'll get lots of all the gory details. It'll be great.
Oh, I'm scared. So I have a 5-year-old daughter. I think I have a little bit of time before I have a wife, but like I've got a little bit of time before I have to deal. Oh man, you're making me nervous. I love you, Shay. This is fun. Okay.
You can do this, Josh. I believe in you.
All right, cool. I'm feeling good now. All right. So talk to us about how did you become the founder of a group like this. Like, what inspired you to start this business? And talk to us about how you formed this, because this is awesome. This is very unique.
It's taken a long time. My path has been so windy and weird. Like, I could never, career counsel someone on how to get here in some sort of normal, predictable path. So I really feel like I finally hit a place in my early 30s where I was like, you know what? I am done with trying to live up to everybody else's expectations and following all these prescribed rules and using these existing, recipes for success. And I'm just going to find areas where I can contribute massive value, serve, love, choose high frequency. And I'm going to create opportunity for myself. And thankfully, I have a business partner in Atlanta, Brian Noel, and he had the same attitude. So we found each other a couple of years ago, and Brian was doing chief branding officer work and storytelling work for brands and personal brands and storytelling through digital mediums. And then I was doing chief marketing officer work, really revolving around like measurement models and digital analytics and lead generation and conversion. So we kept bringing each other in on projects, and we kept kind of finding that, like, you know what's so interesting? We're working with nonprofits, we're working with government entities, we're working with universities, private schools, we're working with sports equipment companies. We're working with all these different industries, and yet our grab bag of solutions kind of looks the same. And really, it's not these kind of like, should you do email 3 times a week? And how should you tag? What are your UTM parameters? Right? It wasn't those. The answers to those questions, it was really the solution. We were moving upstream into shaping the mental models of the leadership team on how to make decisions around marketing, branding, sales, customer service, and product development. So we got together and we're like, okay, listen, this whole consultant thing is fun and easy, but it is not scalable. And there's no like world, you know, shaking impact. So if we're going to keep doing this, let's get a little bit more serious and let's find out how we can make this scalable and have a chance for a greater impact. So we kind of did like this lobotomy, this kind of, you know, joint lobotomy on each other and did this extraction process together to say, is there some sort of mental model? Is there some sort of framework that we are naturally using subconsciously that we can bring forward and then build training around and help other companies to learn this model? And that's where the empathy framework was born.
Wow. Okay. So walk us through what a partner lobotomy session look like. So let's do some role play. Okay.
Okay.
So, you know, we don't have to get too deep, but like, let's role play and ask me some questions or help me with this lobotomy exercise, because I think this is good for people to go through, especially entrepreneurs looking to get partners. So maybe one or two examples.
Absolutely. So, you know, it normally starts with like, what's the DNA of the founder or the owners of the project or the initiative? So we want to get to know you and say, you know, what are your core value sets? If there was going to be a credo, right, or some sort of like banner that you were going to wave over this project, what would that be? So we get kind of clear on the DNA of the actual founders, because I might want to come across as one thing, but if it's not authentic, it's never going to work in the project. So we kind of find like you as a person are very prismatic, but there's some element of your personality and your value system that's going to go into this project. What is it? We did that with all of the founders and all of the leaders, because it's that collective profile, right, that informs everything else. So that's where we start. We'll find out that. Then we start to say, okay, who is it that you really serve, right? Let's, if you're going to have 1 million carbon copies of one customer or one constituent, who would that person be? What's his or her name? What's their last name? Where were they born? What did they eat for dinner? On the weekends, where do they go and hang out, right? So we kind of help them to like really visualize and identify this ideal customer or this ideal user or constituent. And then from there, we help them learn kind of a series and extract a series of how do you stay in relationship with them, right? So if we think about it like in a marriage, every marriage is different, but every successful marriage has some sort of rhythm or system on how you stay connected. Or we have weekly date nights, right? Or, oh, we work together, or, you know, or we travel together, right? We have kids together. So we help them identify, and we extract from the team, how do you want to have relationship with your ideal customer? And then from there, we say, great, what are the pains, the problems, the migraine headaches that they're facing? How can you increase their joys? And we get really clear on what the language is around that and validate it. And then we go into a phase of, great, so how are you uniquely positioned to solve their problem? What feature set is it, or what program elements do you have that really meet and solve those pains and those gains? And then the kind of final phases are, how are you going to communicate that to them? Which channels are they actually on where they're listening for this type of a message? And how do you measure success? What is the measurement model so that every single action and every element of the relationship is justified in qualitative or quantitative business objectives?
That's awesome. All right. So you're like a counselor between the relationship of the owner and their consumer, right? The client.
That's exactly right. We use dating analogies. We use relationship analogies through the entire experience.
Oh, this is fun. All right. So let me ask a question. When we were talking about some of the work that you guys have done in the past, you mentioned nonprofits. I mean, you mentioned a bunch of them. You mentioned nonprofits and government. So nonprofits, I get it. They've got compassion. They've got passion. They're all in. So they're probably pretty easy to understand empathy. What about government or big business? Like, these are people that, you know, they become systematized, they become process oriented, you know, IPO, and they have, you know, shareholders. Like, how do you help organizations like that really understand empathy and compassion?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think your assumption about the nonprofits is a common assumption. And we find that when we work with nonprofits, they are over empathetic. So they are trying to save the whole world, right? So when we work with nonprofits, we're actually narrowing their focus and getting it more laser focused so they can prove the return to their donors and philanthropists and their grant programs. When we're working with government, it's it's a lot of fun when we're working with government programs because, you know, there's all this red tape and there's all these like, well, these people have to be happy and these people have to be happy. And this organization has to be pleased and this organization has to be pleased. And it has to work with all their systems. And I have a thing where I think that collaboration is exhilarating, right? Like it's just so thrilling. But compromise is a complete drag. It's just watered down, blah, that nobody's excited about and doesn't really have any significant impact. So when we're working with these government organizations, there's always that tension between compromise and true collaboration where there is a synergistic fitting together of all of the agendas and priorities.
All right. So when you're working with a nonprofit company, they actually can at times be too empathetic and where you have to reel them back in a little bit to say, who do you really serve? Let's focus on them so you can have a bigger impact. Okay. You see, I never thought about the business implications of trying to serve too many, especially with a nonprofit, because they, you know, I'm a bleeding heart person. Like I love helping people and I dive in, but I can't help everybody well, but I can help a few people incredibly well. So that's how you teach nonprofits.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, sometimes if we're like, if you imagine like we're in a big marketplace and in the marketplace, we see hungry children and we see single moms and we see, you know, disabled elderly men and we see, you know, the environment's being destroyed. Our senses, our empath senses can just get on complete overload. And all of our energy, whether it's heart, money, time, effort, it just spreads in 1,000 different directions. So when we're working with impact-oriented companies, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit, half of the battle is making sure that they stay in the right environment. So if they're really committed to helping hungry children, then they're in the neighborhood where the hungry children are. They're not in the general marketplace. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. speaking of children, my daughter just walked in and
are you
wanted
hungry?
To wave.
She's yeah. Like, Dad, I want a snack.
Yeah.
Hi.
Okay. My daughter says hello to everyone on the show. Say hello, Miss Shay.
Hello, Miss Shay.
I love your headband. It's adorable.
All right, my love. Lily Grace, I'll be with you in 1 second. I love you, sweetheart. Daddy's on a show right now. So yes. So this is the perfect example, right? We have to be empathetic for our environment and for the needs of hungry little children running around that I didn't expect that to happen.
Okay.
So with your business and what you're doing and how you're doing it, like where do you see the biggest fulfillment for you? Like what really turns you where you're like, man, we're making a huge impact and it's lighting my heart on fire, high-fiving Brian. Like, talk to me about some of those instances.
So Brian and I are the same in kind of what gets us the most excited, which works beautifully. And that is, you know, everything we've talked about so far is still really vague in regards to systematizing empathy. So if you kind of picture like, you know, those silly decision flow charts, you know, like, should I post this on social media? It's like, you know, and you just follow the yes and the no, and you follow the flow chart until you get to a decision at the end. Really what we're doing by the end of every module when we're working with companies, we're helping to establish leadership-approved decision-making flow charts. And those moments of empowerment, because all of these forward-thinking founders and leaders attract A players, top talent. They want them to bring their unique genius and they want them to like be knighted and empowered to go and make the brilliant decisions. But if those people have to constantly come back, they don't have enough data, they don't have enough insight, they don't have enough clarity, they don't have enough, you know, transparency into what the founder knows, then their hands are tied, they're crippled, and they have to act like B or C players because they're not empowered properly. So when we actually get to the point where we're systematizing empathy into decision-making flowcharts, and everybody now knows exactly what to say no to and the few things to say yes to that are going to grow the bottom line and grow the impact metrics, that's when Brian and I are just, you know, it's the best time of our lives.
Well, I could see you absolutely being lit on fire. You know, I'm looking at you and I can see like how this excites you. So give me an example Because attracting talent is one of the hardest things for a growing business to do. So give me an example of how you guys could help them attract the A players. Because B players and C players sometimes cost a lot more than, you know, really trying to hire one A player.
They really do. And, you know, we're not for every company, right? So we work with forward-thinking founders and leaders who are in a growth phase, not those whose companies are nosediving, right? The ones who have been growing and they've hit a ceiling that they need to grow to the next level. And the mindset and the value system of cultures like that are, you know, transparency, coachability, curiosity. So we're really not for everyone. And what we find is that most of our clients are already attracting top talent, but they might be having trouble retaining them. So they're the companies, if you think of in town, like the coolest companies to work for that everyone's like beating down the door. Many of those are our clients. And then what we're trying to help them to do is, okay, now how do we treat an environment where that top talent is completely untethered to soar to their highest heights so that they personally win and you personally win because a rising tide lifts all boats. So when we're trying to help companies retain top talent, a lot of it is about making sure that we kind of break down those decision-making bottlenecks inside the leadership team. It's a lot of breaking decision-making bottlenecks and empowering people with decision-making frameworks so that they can run, right, and do their work and execute.
This is good. All right. So you really like working with growth phase companies who are trying to acquire new clients and trying to acquire new talent, right? So on this growth trajectory, but they want to keep the corporate DNA, the culture, and they really want to stay connected with their customers and with their employees. And that's when they start, that's when they really need you at that stage, right?
That's right. Yeah, when they kind of start to feel like they've been on that track and it's been working, and then all of a sudden they're doing the same things they've always done and things just aren't working anymore and they can't quite figure out, you know, where the problem might be. It tends to just be a mental model situation where that mental model hasn't been disseminated throughout the organization.
Okay, so talk to us about how you like to engage with these kind of groups. So people who are listening out there and they're going, wow, we're in this growth phase. Our heads are spinning, you know, like how do you help these groups like tactically?
So normally we'll come in for a 3-day workshop with the leadership team. And that is either a 1 day or 3 days broken up over anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks. And that's just our dating phase. So in a workshop, the idea is I come in and, you know, I contribute a little value and you receive my value and you contribute value back, you know, and is this a mutually beneficial experience? Are we on culture together? And then after kind of that dating period ends, then we tend to move into 9-month rounds of engagement. And normally it's about 2 rounds when a company kind of gets their wish list completely checked off, right? So we'll kick off a session at the beginning of a round, at the beginning of 9 months, and we'll really get clear on what is it that we want to accomplish over the next 18 months together. Our visitor is back. So we'll get in the room with the leaders. And we'll get the wish list going. We'll say, what's realistic to accomplish in 9 months? And then let's take a breather, let that marinate, and then come back to the rest of the wish list. And we are in the room with the leadership team once every 3 months for a full day session. And then we are on the phone with the leadership team once every 2 weeks and 2-week sprints, driving outcomes every 2 weeks.
Okay. So with these groups that you put together, you bring them together. What does that look like when you get everyone in the same room or when you have one of these events? Like, what does that look like? So if someone's sitting there listening and they're going, hey, that's actually interesting, I'd like to know more about that. What does the event look like? What does it feel like?
So we try to get into a nice creative space. Oftentimes we prefer to take the companies off site and we'll take them into a really beautiful venue that's completely private. And we'll take normally 5 to 9 leaders, really can't do more than 9 because the decision-making, right, kind of stalls in the room. So they kind of find those 5 to 9 key leaders and we give them some prep work and we get ready to come into the day to make decisions. So we are going to make some decisions together in the room. And it's normally a whiteboard room, no electronics. So everybody kind of leaves their phones at the door or in their bags, no laptops are out. And it is a working session. And it's grueling. We're pouring ourselves out like a drink offering, right, throughout the whole experience. And it's beautiful. Everyone just feels so well spent. And normally at the end of 6 to 8 hours together, you know, the frequent comments are, we got more accomplished together as a leadership team today than we have in the past 12 months of weekly meetings. Why didn't we do this sooner? And the decision sticks because of the process that we use in extracting the decision making. The decisions stick and they're implementable and everybody can go and act on them immediately.
All right. So with these groups, if people want to learn more about these kind of groups or see if it would be a good fit, like what's the process of learning more about these things?
You know, right now we're just jumping on a conversation. Most of our work has been through referrals. So it normally starts with like a conversation on the phone and then a meet and greet in your place, right? Like in your space, so we can get a feel for the DNA and the culture a little bit. And then normally after one or two conversations, you know, we're either ready to do a very short workshop series or we say, you know, I think that I've got another partner in town. You know, you're maybe in a different place and you could use some different expertise to help you through your current stuck problems. I've got a fantastic network of other brilliant people who are brilliant in different ways that we might refer out to as well.
That's awesome. So you're very picky about who you work with also.
Yeah.
Give me some of the characteristics that you work with and that you say probably not a good fit for us.
Yeah, you know, if there's, we all do things, we all have fear, right? But there's a difference in how we respond to fear. So if we are fear motivated and fear driven, if there's a potential client who's fear motivated or fear driven, we can't help them. There's other people who can help them with different services and processes, but we can't help somebody who's fear motivated. What we can work with are people who say, I'm scared to death of massive change and I'm going to do it scared, right? So having courage is a huge factor, being curious. So if someone comes in and tells us, listen, I need you to do this and this. I need you to do this with this employee. I need you to do this in this department, right? And they're kind of like, I don't really need your brains and your heart. I just need your hands. Well, then there's probably a different partner in town that's like really excellent hands that they can deploy. So an ideal partner for us would say, listen, I know there's things I don't know. And I think that those knowledge gaps that I can't even understand yet are some of the real reasons why we're not growing yet. So I need you to help me figure out what I don't know. And I'm very curious about it. It's not going to threaten my sense of identity or, you know, my personal determiner of success if I discover that there's areas that I haven't learned in yet.
Got it. And this is good. And I know that we're wrapping up on time, but there's just a few questions that I'd really like to ask you if you have a few more minutes.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So, and I put you on the spot. What do you? I'm sorry about that.
No, Josh, I am choosing no empathy at this moment.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, you're an incredible guest. You've got a wonderful heart. You're really helping the business leaders to really connect with their employees and with their customers. Does this really have a huge impact on revenue, on financial growth? Because a lot of these people are probably looking at, yeah, this feels nice, or they could be thinking, right? Like,
yep.
Does this really impact the bottom line?
Absolutely. So what's incredible is Brian and I are very bottom line driven. So we just believe that like good choices and choosing love and like all of these like soft qualities actually make real tangible differences in value in the world. And so that's why we are measurement model oriented. Everything we do has some sort of justification metric to it. So, you know, you just reverse engineer those. Like if the company has these 3-year objectives, you reverse engineer that into an annual goal and you turn that into quarterly goals, right? And then from the quarterly goals, you're setting your actions to have direct value towards those measurable value towards those goals. So I think, you know, having measurement model background has helped significantly in making like a soft skill have real business value. But an example is, you know, one of our clients, their new product development process cost them, before we came in, nearly $250,000. So, you know, they have high ticket items. So $250,000 wasn't, you know, killing the business. But after we were done with them for just, it was actually within the first 3 months, but you know, we say after the first round, which is 9 months, they got their product development process down to $25,000 for any new product. So their margins just jumped phenomenally, right? And that's not just one product. That they replicate that system across all product development.
Wow. Okay. So with your framework of thinking and the relationship therapy that you guys do between founders and the business leaders, the employees and the customers, you guys were able to reduce it like 90% or whatever that number is backwards.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Awesome. Yeah. And you know, from revenue, an example would be a product that was not under development, right? Because they weren't listening to the customers and asking for it, ended up being within the first, I think it was 90 days of the product, even being in pre-sales, it was a $500,000 PO result. So the product wasn't there, but because they used the empathy framework, they decided to make this product, and it resulted in $500,000 in sales in the first 90 days that it was available for pre-order through purchase orders. So, you know, we don't charge $500,000 for our services. Pretty awesome return.
Yeah, that sounds like great, man. I love that. So you're here in Orlando. You're building this incredible business. I guess, how can people out there, founders who are listening to this, business owners who are going, or people who are leaving, you know, their department head, and they're going, we really need to institute this into our business. We're growing. And how could they find you? How could they learn more about you?
I think that there's kind of three opportunities. You know, if somebody says, hey, I need to have a conversation right now because we're planning our budget, you know, for next year, and I need to know what this could even look like, what results we could get, that's an email to me and I'll answer immediately. So that's Shay, S-H-E-A at ferverworks.com. If someone says, you know, I think I need to like absorb more content around this, on our website, we have kind of pre-release information about our book. It's called The Empathy Framework. And so that'll be released this summer, and they can just go on there and, you know, sign up for information on the pre-release. The book will be available. It's like a handbook on what is the empathy framework and how does it translate into dollars and how does it change my weekly meeting structure, right, and the daily decisions and tasks that I do. So that's all in the Empathy Framework book that's coming out this summer. And then if there's somebody who's like a little bit, you know, softer still on, man, I feel like empathy is important. I don't have clear enough vision to even imagine it playing out in a business or organization environment. Well, I would invite those people listening to join us for one of our empathy talk series. And those are happening all across Central Florida all year long with some of our clients, some of our partner brands. These are all companies and organizations that believe in the power of systematized empathy. They're hosting lunch, breakfast, or dinner, depends on which location, for 12 influencers and leaders at each event. And Ferverworks will have a professional facilitator there to help dive into the specific applications of empathy in various industries or organizations. So we're going to do empathy and our food. We've had someone ask to do empathy and the arts. We're going to do empathy and disruptive markets, empathy and economic development, empathy and community building, right? So there's kind of and empathy and our housing situation. So we're going to look at like, how do we as decision makers, leaders, influencers actually start applying insights around empathy into our daily decision making in this empathy talk series.
I love it. I love it. And we'll share some of these links in the show notes below so that if people want to contact you, learn more, if they want to dive in with you, they could, you know, email you, or if they want to, you know, learn more over time, they could do that. I've got one more question because we had an unannounced co-host walk in on the show. My 5-year-old daughter, she's one of my best friends, who wanted to say hi to you. I guess she just felt very connected with you. What advice do you have for a 5-year-old girl who one day is going to be my boss? I'm sure of it. She controls me already. She's got me wrapped. What advice do you have for a future female entrepreneur?
Don't apologize. As women, we do not realize how often we say, I'm sorry. We apologize so much. And every time we apologize, we are diminishing our power. We can be kind. We can be considerate. We can be thoughtful and giving. We do not have to be nice. What does nice mean other than like palatable? Who ever accomplished anything, right, by being nice? You know, again, kind, compassionate, generous, giving, considerate, but don't apologize. Don't be nice. It doesn't serve the world. It doesn't serve your light.
Ooh, I like that. Okay. So I'll tell my daughter that. And she will say, thank you for being a part of the show. Me and my daughter both loved having you as a guest on the show. And this has been absolutely wonderful. You are an incredible leader here in Orlando. Orlando salutes you. We're proud to see it. Thank you. So thank you for coming on the show. Is there anything that you thought of that you wanted to say or anybody to give a shout out to before we wrap up and go on with our day?
I'm pretty sure that as soon as we hang up, I'm going to think of like 10 things. But really right now, I just think, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing, Josh. I have a lot of gratitude for you. Bringing these conversations to the surface are really important. Your work with David Brim and entrepreneurs, OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org, I think is so critical, because centralizing our resources, right, making things accessible, making resources accessible and understandable, contextualizing these resources, I think is the first step to unlocking all of the greatness that is just right here, maybe sometimes just under the surface, and bringing it out and helping it to just blow up in the best way.
Well, I love it. You said it better than I could. So I'll leave that as our exit. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in on the show, Shay. Wonderful time with you. I hope you guys have a lovely day. We will talk with you all on the next episode. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org.